My next guest is the co-author of a book that has sold more than 1 million copies around the world. That's a pretty sizable number. It's called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, and it aims to challenge stereotypes in children's books. There are no princesses waiting to be saved. Instead, this book tells the stories of 100 extraordinary women who made history. It all started in 2016 with a crowdfunding campaign that attracted more than $1 million. Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls is the name of the book. It's written by US-based Italian authors Francesca Cavallo and Elena Favelli. Francesca Cavallo is in our Melbourne studio this morning. Welcome to breakfast.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And welcome to Australia. It is a blockbuster bestseller. For those that haven't heard of it, what is Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls?
It's a collection of 100 bedtime stories, each inspired to the life and adventures of 100 extraordinary women, from Elizabeth I to Serena Williams.
And how did it all start? Because there was this crowdfunding campaign. You wanted, you know, a few thousand dollars to get it going. You attracted $1 million and pretty quickly.
Yeah, so it got started with a newsletter. So we had this title in mind, and the title was Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. And we sent every week a story that parents could share with their kids at the dinner table, stories about empowering female role models. The newsletter took off, so people started sharing with each other, and we reached a basis of 4,000 subscribers. So by that point, we were like, okay, maybe this could become a book. But by that point, we already had an audience that we knew was interested in these stories. So we said, why, instead of going through the route of a traditional publishing deal, don't we try to launch it with a Kickstarter campaign? And so we did. We launched in April 2016 with a goal of $40,000. And within the first 29 days, we raised almost $700,000, becoming the most crowdfunded book in history. And in the following month, we reached $1.2 million in pre-orders. And we held that title of most crowdfunded book in history up until Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls 2 came about a few months ago. And then that became the most crowdfunded book in history.
Got it. Now, I read that the pair of you had moved to Silicon Valley. You were living, working in the heart of the tech industry, notoriously a bit of a boys' club. I'm interested to understand how your experiences there shaped your desire to do this, and then how you did it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So our experience in Silicon Valley was, on one side, great, because it gave us the tools to take our company off the ground. We got accepted into an accelerator. We got the first investor on board over there. But on the other hand, we found ourselves in a situation where we were constantly belittled by some of the investors that we were meeting to raise more capital, because they were telling us that our idea was cute but not big enough. We were told that we should switch.
What did they mean by cute but not big enough? Because, I mean, I have the book here in front of me. I've got a few copies of it as Christmas presents for nieces and goddaughters and that kind of thing. I mean, it's a huge idea.
Yeah, but well, at the time we weren't discussing the book. The book came as part of the life of our company, Timbuktu Labs, which we founded in 2012, and which is the reason why we moved to Silicon Valley. So, but you know, the thing is that when you talk to investors and when you read their blog posts, they usually say that they invest in the founders. So the product, the current product that they have, doesn't really matter, because in the life of a startup, it is normal to pivot and to experiment on a lot of different products. So you invest really in the founders. So if you believe that your founders are hardworking, if you believe that they are talented, if you believe that they have a big vision, you invest in them. If not, you don't. The problem with female founders is that whenever in all of these situations where you describe a big idea, if you are a male entrepreneur, you are called a visionary in Silicon Valley. If you are a female entrepreneur, on the other hand, you are called naive. So that's exactly what happened to us.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts on how you two, as Italian women, were perceived in the tech sector in Silicon Valley. I mean, how did they, I know you're saying their view was that the idea wasn't big enough, but how did they receive you and perceive you?
Well, of course, it's hard for me to say. I can only say from my point of view what I perceived or what they thought of us. On one end, it is important for and only right for me to say that we got opportunities in Silicon Valley and in California that we couldn't get any other place. So we were two immigrant entrepreneurs. We hadn't figured out our visa situation yet, and still we could find people who wanted to invest in our company. So that's, I mean, that must be said. On the other hand, when we wanted to move forward and raise more capital, it was impossible for us to do that because there are a lot of, I don't think the immigrant thing was played a big role. It was more the fact that they choose who to invest in based on patterns. And because most of the investment that they did were on men, it's very hard for traditional investors to bet on women-founded companies.
So in this book, Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, you tell 100 different stories. There are scientists, surfers, archaeologists. There are politicians, Margaret Thatcher, writers, Maya Angelou. But you've also chosen some contemporary women like Malala Yousafzai, the US gymnast Simone Biles. How do you narrow it down to 100 stories?
It was very hard, of course, because the world is full of extraordinary women, but we chose... we used three main criteria. The first one was that we wanted to feature women from as many fields as possible. As you just said, we wanted to feature trombonists, judges, scientists, writers. On the other hand, also, we wanted to feature women from all over the world because children's books don't just lack diversity in terms of gender, but also in terms of race and religious background. And we wanted each girl around the world to find something that could remind her of her personal situation, of her personal story. And the third one was that we chose women whose personal lives had details which could be interesting for a kid to learn about. For example, when we decided to feature the story of a fashion designer, we discovered that Coco Chanel learned to sew clothes for dolls from using the scrap material of the nuns at the orphanage where she was staying. So all of her dolls ended up dressed in black and white clothes. If you then think of the evolution of the style of Coco Chanel, that's an incredible detail that kids can relate to. Or, for example, when we found out that Julia Child, the famous American chef, before becoming a chef, had been a spy and she had been cooked anti-shark cakes that were meant to protect bombs directed at at Russian submarines during Second World War. So these disgusting cakes basically kept sharks away from these bombs. So things that make these stories more than biographies, and they make these stories interesting to read at bedtime, and so that they don't feel like homework.
And I understand your favorite story is that of Lella Lombardi, an F1 pilot.
Yeah, she was incredible. She was she learned how to drive in the hills of Piemonte in Italy, and she was the daughter of a butcher. So her father used to time her while she was driving the van in the hills and delivering steaks and salami. So that was, you know, many of these women, because of the limitations of the time because of the gender expectations, had to learn how to do what they did in very unconventional ways. So the book is a big celebration of beating the odds and following your heart.
I've already had a text in someone saying you should also think, Hamish, about giving this book to your nephews and godsons as well. I mean, is this book for boys too? Do you think it's worth attempting to give them the same message?
Absolutely, yeah. Sometimes we get asked, "Are you going to make a book for boys?" And we usually say, "This is the book for boys." So even if they are not in the title, it's okay for them to learn that. Sometimes even if they're not in the title, they can still enjoy something. And honestly, now we have a huge amount of readers around the world, and a lot of boys are super into these stories. They don't think, oh, these are all women, so I don't care about them. So it's more of a stereotype that we adults have and pass on to the next generations, and we probably should stop doing that.
Francesca Cavallo, it's been terrific to have you on the program and to hear your story. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Francesca Cavallo, a co-author of Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, published by Penguin Books.